Hi, and welcome to I Want You to Watch This. I'm Dennis Buckles, and I'm with my friends here.
I'm Craig Hale.
And I'm Colin Munch.
And we are going to be talking about Arrival today. And Arrival is what, a movie 2016?
From this year, yeah.
From this year. I don't have a director. And I don't think either of us do,
but we will look that up.
We will look that up. But it does star Amy Adams,
yes.
and Jeremy Renner. Yeah.
The screenwriter is the big guy in this movie. He's the one that everyone's been talking about.
Right,
and that is very apparent.
Yeah,
in this film. It's the script is what really shines through.
It's based off a book. Oh, before we continue, I'd like to say something. We don't know what we're talking about, really. I mean, we're not, like, trained critics or anything like that. Like, my background is in biology. Colin, I think.
I'm kind of the closest. I have a theater degree, but I don't really work in that field at all, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got music and English literature.
Yeah, so I'm the resident idiot, and I'll say some shit that, like, isn't about it, but, anyways, we're just movie fans, and so that's why we're doing this. Anyways, Arrival 2016. We'll kick it off by kind of going over the movie. It starts off with a really depressing story. Personal story of, it's like maybe 10 minutes long of this woman raising this child alone and then the kid getting a terminal illness and dying.
So that's where we begin.
Yeah.
and then the movie kind of delves into the main gist of it, which is about aliens landing on Earth and the military is, trying to figure out how to respond. And one of the people they go to is Amy Adams, who is a linguistics professor and, like, one of the top linguists in the world. And they're trying to see if she can communicate with these aliens.
And she was the mother from the beginning.
Yes, Amy Adams is the mother who we saw in the beginning.
Yes, Louise is her name in the movie.
Yes, Amy Adams' character is Louise.
Yeah, so, let's see, are we going by character name or are we going by actor?
I think it'll be a little interchangeable. I'm definitely probably going to be calling her Amy Adams, and I'll be definitely calling there's a guy,
Jeremy.
She's this linguist that the military hires to communicate with these aliens and make first contact, and whisk her away to Montana, where this spaceship is, and it's one of 12 locations around the planet that they found one of these spaceships. And it's never what one of my first favorite moments of this is that it's never really directly talked about in the movie, but it's definitely referenced is this just international tension that's just rife throughout the movie, and it's definitely
mentioned. It's heavily featured, there's international tension and like the people ways different countries are responding to it is causing like international problems.
Right. Like I guess what I'm saying is that like nothing outside of like, the aliens just showing up causes, like, civil unrest. It's just, like, their presence causes people to freak out. It's not like someone declares war or anything like that. They proceed to...
And it's also at this time when she is brought to Montana that she meets Jeremy Renner, who is a physicist who has been brought out to consult on the same thing. There they meet with Forrest Whitaker, who is the leader of this military unit that is on site. And there is that one actor who's in everything. I'm not going to remember his name, but he is like someone from the State Department or something like that.
Oh, right. He's like the residential...
And he's sort of the guy in charge. It's between him and Forrest Whitaker of who's like in charge of the whole situation.
Yeah, and then there's like a handful of like military-type site characters and stuff. And so they then there's a really cool opening scene that, like, upon watching a second time, I realized it's this awesome homage to Kubrick in 2001 Space Odyssey, when they first get on the spaceship and, like, the soundtrack is all weird and bizarre, and, like, there's even a shot where it's upside down, like, just to, like, really emphasize how weird and bizarre it is.
Yeah.
And, like, how, like, the whole, the ship is all charcoal black and, like, and it's just really stark and alien. And
everything is even gravity is being really messed
right.
up and stuff. They like jump off of the scissor lifts that they're on and float and kind
right.
of like the aliens are making accommodations for us to get onto their ship and
yeah.
establish communications.
And then you see the aliens for the first time and they're literally in a shroud. Like they're kind of like you can definitely see them and like what they look like, but you don't really know where they end. And they're massive, and they kind of look like these giant walking squid things.
They're like daddy long legs.
Yeah, yeah. And so then the movie kind of goes through like a
whole just portion of them establishing communication. Like they try auditorily, but then they start doing written language and spoken language at the same time, so
right.
that we can do these things, and the aliens are showing us their symbols, and we're showing them our symbols, and there's just a number of scenes of us.
Well, initially, like they don't understand that they have a written language because everyone's just trying to talk to the aliens. And Amy Adams is the character who comes in and has this different approach where she brings in this vocabulary list that initially the powers that be are suspect of, and they're not sure exactly what it's going to lead to. They're trying to get to the end result, and it turns out, of course, that this turns out to be the key for establishing a way of communicating with these aliens, because no one knows what they're saying, and from what they find out, the aliens actually aren't really saying anything with their vocalizing. It's all about the ink that is
right.
That they're displaying for their language. Which, also turned out to have, like, greater implications on the fabric of the entire movie.
Yeah, and it kind of, from there, it launches into this a montage of them talking to the aliens.
But it's still, everything is going at a very slow pace. And
yeah.
Some of the military people are really frustrated by that and are getting afraid. Meanwhile, there is real tension coming from the Chinese and the Russians, who are getting ready to attack the aliens in their countries. And so there's this international tension of we have to establish these communications and these need to start going better faster before people elsewhere escalate the situation beyond our control.
And meanwhile, the main character, Amy Adams Louise, she's having these, like, flashbacks or whatever, like maybe like hallucinations about this girl that you saw in the beginning, like her whole lifespan of like growing up and everything, and there's all these little snippets of that like interspersed into, and it's like affecting her life.
Yeah, and it's really hard to tell. I wish I had had a chance to see it again, because I'm sure that on the second viewing it's much better.
Oh,
but
that's amazing.
It's really hard to tell if the first time through if these are actually hallucinations or if they're just flashbacks, because they seem to be like staggering her at times.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, things that are like it'll happen and it like disrupts what she's trying to do, and it's, she's really taken aback by it.
But
yeah.
Yeah, like it'll like affect her physically, like she'll like fall over or something.
Yeah, well it's really weird too, because like that first scene that the movie opens with is tied into these visions or these flashbacks, and as the movie progresses and, having, like, watched the movie the second time through, you definitely see that the pattern that starts to develop, like, as she learns the language and these visions become more frequent, like, you start to, like, pin that, like, the language and those visions together, and how, by the end, it's just mind-blowing how these, once again, the language that they say, transcends time. It has no, it's a loop
right.
of
yes.
time.
Yeah.
And that plays into
one of the things I want to talk about.
Yeah,
right. And we'll
these,
get to that
these,
when
yeah.
we got to explain how we get to that part, which is, they're communicating and everything, and the geopolitical tensions are getting more tense, and then it comes to kind of head where, like, they like Russia and China, like Colin's with Russia and China are gonna like fire up on the aliens, and it comes to this ultimatum where they're like, all right, we have to ask them this question, and the question is, what is their purpose here? And so they finally do. Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams like finally ask the aliens like what their purpose is. And the answer is that they get is use weapon.
Offer weapon.
And that's like, that's what they interpret. And so it fires off this whole thing where all of the world powers just like freak out, and then they stop communicating with one another. So it becomes this like kind of like ultimatum point. And they won't, like the US military won't let Amy Adams like do what she needs to do in order to like, you know, figure out what they meant by offer weapon. And yeah, it's shit kind of hits the fan.
And so kind of at this point, Amy Adams goes rogue. She goes back in there to communicate again, even though she's not supposed to. She's been kind of forbade from it. At the same time, one of the lower-level military guys who's been in the room with them has set a bomb in the ship. And Amy Adams is going to be presumably killed by this bomb. And once the military guys come to go after Amy Adams, they also kind of find these other soldiers who have broken ranks and have set this bomb, and they're starting to fight with each other. There's this whole thing. The bomb goes off, but the aliens have tipped it and Amy Adams out of the ship at the last second, like saving her life.
Right.
At the cost of one of their own.
Right. Right when they offer up like all of this information via their crazy ink circle language.
Yeah, it's like ink or it's like smoke. It's like
it reminds me of coffee
really stains, cool effect.
Yeah, it's really super cool, but it's a...
Well, and then right before they blow up the ship, the aliens finally like give this huge message that to Amy Adams, and no one is able to translate it, but this is
essentially the
final moment where they receive the key that they've been looking for, and...
Instead of it being like, they get like one symbol here, one symbol there, they give us just this one gigantic
cloud
just full of thousands of symbols.
But still, shit's all tense, and they still need to figure stuff out. And so, after the explosion, the alien ships all move away from the planet. They, like, gain an altitude. And then people really don't know what to do because they can't, like, communicate with the aliens anymore. And through this, at one point, they send down, like, a little pod. And meanwhile, Amy Adams is, like, really, like, her, like, flashbacks or hallucinations are, like, more and more, where she's, like, kind of, like, reading the minds of the aliens. Like, she's, like, compelled to go outside and, like, go to this pod.
And the aliens are starting to appear in these flashbacks, hallucinations, dreams, like, whatever they might be.
Yeah. And so she gets in this pod and talks to the alien directly. And it's an actually really cool back and forth where... And that's where, I really love
it. This is the point where the big kind of reveal happens in the movie.
Right.
I'd say it's a definite reveal.
Yeah. Well, it's the part where the first time through, suddenly the movie starts making sense.
Right.
Because it's intentionally confusing you in the first part of it, because they want you to kind of be, what is going on with the timeline of this movie?
Right.
Like, time in this movie doesn't make any fucking sense. But then... They kind of reveal to Amy Adams, like, this gift that they are giving her is, like, a different understanding of the nature of time.
So...
An ability to view time or to view existence in a non-linear fashion.
So real quick, we'll close up the movie. So the alien, like through that, like, Amy Adams, like, figures out that, like, it's not an offer of a weapon that the aliens were getting at. It was an offer of their language. And it's their language is the key to the survival of, like, of this whole thing of, like, the human race and, like, and even the race of the aliens and all this stuff. And what it is that their language allows the people that truly understand it to view time the way the aliens do, which is non-linear and in, like, a cyclical fashion. So it's like, as Amy Adams describes, it's like being able to view your life from beginning to end at once. And so, in that, the movie then, like, does some really cool shit where, like, so the leader of the Chinese military, like, tells Amy Adams in the future his phone number to call him at in order to install this, like, world peace to stop, like, the potential of a world war and, like, blowing up the aliens.
He tells her this in the future as well as telling her, like, his wife's dying words to her. And that's, like, this message that she sends. It's pretty awesome.
It's really fucking awesome. And, of course, you have to watch the movie in order to enjoy this podcast and understand what the fuck we're saying, because I'm sure none of this makes sense.
Yes, if you haven't seen this movie, we must sound like absolute.
So, anyways, she uses time travel language to prevent the end of the Earth, and you learn that at the end of the movie, you learn that the whole story at the very beginning was actually what is eventually going to happen to Amy Adams
in the end.
At the end,
it's because it's
a flashback for
it's like a
we find out now that Jeremy Renner is the father of the child that Amy Adams has not yet had,
right?
But has been having all these flashbacks to the life of, and Amy Adams has this thing where she knows what's going to happen.
Right.
She knows that she's going to have this daughter who's going to have a terminal illness, that Jeremy Renner is going to leave her, that all this stuff, and she decides to do it anyway. And that's one of the really cool
things. And then you cry.
Yes.
Like a baby. And so that is, in a very shitty nutshell, Arrival. And so we will go more in depth into that nutshell. I will kick it off with, we already went over this. The birth and death of the daughter in the opening. That was just amazing how it was done. I thought it was just really, really well done, really well shot. It was really succinct, and then how it was eked out throughout the movie, and then upon, like, watching it a second time, how it's worked into how she's, like, it's evidence of her learning the alien language, and the more she understands the alien language, the more she's able to see her life all at once, and so therefore you're seeing the flashbacks more and more, and until she, like, fully understands it, and then it all comes to reality.
Kind of similar to the first note I had, which was just about the nature of time in this movie and, like, kind of the fractured timeline, but that the movie is very intentionally doing that because they want you to kind of come full circle and get this whole thing of, like, oh, it's about non-linear, like, timeline, or it's about non-linear existence, which is a really difficult thing for humans to wrap their heads around.
Oh, yeah, I don't fucking get it. I'm entertained by it, but I don't think I understand it.
One of the things this movie reminds me of is, and I tried to look up which episode it is, but there's an episode of Star Trek Next Generation where they encounter an alien who wants to study them because this alien... yes. But they encounter this alien who wants to study the ship and study the people because this alien can't conceive of a linear existence. It's a alien life that is, like, totally cyclical, and, like, they can't think of, well, what do you mean? Like, there's a point where you exist and a point where you don't exist.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I think, you know, of that, like, non-linear, like, totality, like, they bring that up in this movie, too, about how, like, the aliens, even their bodies, are, like, non-linear. There's no front, backwards, or side-to-side, like, for these aliens. Like, their entire bodies are, like... Essentially, they can move at any direction at any time, just like their language can, you know, go in any direction at any time, just like their minds and their time can be at any place at any time. And it's something that they rehash, like, throughout the movie, like, time and time again, with, like, the fact that these flashbacks actually turn out to be flash-forwards, with the fact that they start the movie with the end of an entire lifetime.
Right.
And then, like, go back through that, like, as the movie progresses and as she's learning this language, she gets more and more peeks into it until at the end it's, like, fully realized. And so, like, they just keep bringing these things back again, and they do a really good job of having those themes not be, not overshadow any part of the movie and still play a part throughout every scene in the movie.
Right. It's like it's awesome story within a story. And I really can't think of another example of that that's done so elegantly.
And it's something that's like a real heady and difficult intellectual concept, but they're not like, being heavy-handed with it at all, which is really interesting, like, really you have to admire about it.
Right.
They're really subtle about doing this very intense intellectual thing.
Why does she live in that giant house?
Like, I thought that too. I was like, she must be doing really well
as a linguistics teacher. Yeah. In like a backwoods.
But we do actually kind of see some other glimpses of that. Like, she's written like really successful books.
But
before this, she's been a contractor with the military.
Yeah,
that's true.
So there's a lot of other. She has other income coming in besides just her teaching salary.
Do you think like the prequel to this movie is like some like Jason Bourne knockoff type of thing?
I would love it if it was just something about like she's translating Pakistani for some. I don't know.
Right.
They actually did say what the other thing was.
You made quick work of those.
Farsi translations.
Yeah. You made quick work of those insurgents. Like, I'd like to see that movie. terrible, terrible Hollywood blockbuster. Let's see here. Arrangement of ships around the planet. Yep. Never mind.
They make kind of a point of it. It's like really random spots.
Yeah.
It's not like in New York, Moscow, Tokyo. Like, one of them's in Montana.
But it's, I mean, it's purposely spread throughout the planet to, what, increase the odds? Because, I mean, the aliens can, in a sense, tell the future. And so, like, they're like, oh, we need to do this shit. So we need to do it in a way where we're going to be able to communicate it. They live in these places.
Well, right? I think it just has to do with, like, you know, they kind of go back into that where they say, you know, Earth doesn't have one ruler. There's not one person that they can go to. So I don't think that was necessarily, like, I think they were just plotting down wherever they thought would, like, bring people to them. Like, I don't know if it was necessarily, like, any, because they never make any point of it in the movie to say, like, other than to say, like, it's random. Like,
right.
Really.
It's just like, time traveling movies and like sci-fi. So I'm a huge fucking sci-fi nerd, and like I get all nitpicky about it, and like, hey, well, that didn't mean anything. And one of the things about it is like, it's just that is like, so like the aliens, like the whole thing is like, you know, they are helping out humans because they know in the future, 3,000 years in the future, they need the help of the humans, so they need to teach them this language in order to help themselves in the future, and so that. Known, why didn't they just come down and start, like, writing English to them, you know?
Because
like,
they never write English in the movie.
No, but they could. Because they know it. I mean, they figure it out.
Well,
like,
they understand it, but
yeah,
they
yeah.
don't.
But, the, I mean...
That was kind of one thing that I kind of kept wondering was, if these creatures, these aliens, have no concept of time, can see in any time, then... Like, why wouldn't they know, like, to just directly go to,
like,
Louise?
Right, and,
like,
maybe not necessarily,
like, and it's not,
right, maybe not necessarily, like, in English, but, like, make it easier.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And, I don't know, this is the thing when you get into time travel. Like,
right.
Anytime you're dealing with,
right.
like, messing with time, like, there's always going to be those weird questions of, like,
right.
how the fuck did
well,
you
it's like
that
it's
happen?
Like Hermione ruining
right.
all of Harry Potter. You know, like, she could, you have a time-traveling amulet, oh, we'll just go back to when, you know, fucking Voldemort's doing his shit and make him not exist, you know? But then there'd be no Harry Potter.
There are certain things in time travel that you just have to take as a buy. Like, that. Like, okay, technically this could solve every problem, but
right.
you still need to find some
yeah.
sort of
well,
limitations
yeah.
on it.
Well,
yeah, it's part of the storytelling.
Yeah,
know?
And I feel like the whole thing of, like, miscommunication and, like, mistranslation was, like, a recurring theme in this movie. Like, they talk about, you know, the whole thing where the military comes to Louise/Amy Adams and she tells them before they go to Berkeley to talk to the other guy, ask him what the Sanskrit translation for war is.
Right.
And it's like the difference between argument or like more cows.
Right.
Which, you know...
There's
that
a lot
just,
of difference.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's like that
I mean.
And then the whole like kangaroo thing where,
right.
you know, it was like... Oh, yeah, like, she, like, made up this whole story of, like, they went into this village, and they were, like, asking, and it was, like, kangaroo, and,
yeah, about
like,
Captain
the aboriginals were,
the
like,
aborigines.
Yeah, and there was, like, oh, kangaroo just meant, I don't know, and then, like, at the end of it, it was, like, no, that's actually complete and total bullshit, but that proves my point, exactly.
Right, yeah,
and that's a theme throughout the movie. She's always talking about, like, yeah, we have to be very careful, because we're doing this, communicating with a new people and we don't know anything about them, so they might take this to mean X, but it absolutely means, like, banana.
Yeah. Well, like, offer weapon.
Yeah, the weapon versus tool versus, like, skill versus, versus anything that could be translated to, like, something that you utilize.
Kind of want to rip on their chemistry. I didn't, I felt like, I mean, I thought Renner was doing a better job than she was. I felt like Amy Adams showed zero affection for Renner throughout the movie.
This is why I actually really loved it. I really loved this love story because it wasn't really a love story until the last, like, minute of the movie. Which, you don't realize it was a love story until the last minute of the movie. And I don't think she even realized that it was because she was caught up in this whole moment, and she was the shining star. Like, she was the person who was making all of, like, the major leaps. She was the person that was putting in the hours, and not that Jeremy Renner wasn't, but she was the person that was making the major breakthroughs. So I can see him falling in love with her through that admiration and through that...
You're right.
Like he says, where he's like, of all of this, like, the one thing that, like, I'm the most amazed by is you, like, at the end of the movie.
Yes, absolutely.
And she, like, she kind of got that, like, mass uploaded through learning the language. And so, like, at the end when, you know, you're kind of thinking they're going to go in for the kiss, but it turns out to be, like, really, like the most...
Oh,
like, God, most...
When she says, like, I forgot what it's like to hold you.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the first time.
Oh, my God!
So that it was for her. It was, like, almost instantaneous because she was so caught up in this. And then at the same time, she was, like, getting this other, like, this future, like, fed into her slowly and not realizing what it was until the end. And then getting all of that. And then, like, she got all of those years of love, like, in that one moment. And that's when she fell in love. And he got that slow build. But she totally got that, like, epiphany of, oh my God, I love you, like, and I've loved you for so long now, even though this is the first time, like, for you, that this moment is happening. Like, I've already lived through all of this at this point now.
Yeah, not to sound like Amy Nicholson, but it's true, and it's also part of the device of us, like, kind of throwing us off the scent of that they're going to be romantically linked, that he's her husband, that he's the father of the child. It's not until we get the full reveal that the movie comes full circle that we realize that they're in love. Like, you see him falling in love with her, like, exactly the scene you talked about where he's saying, like, she's amazing, like, she's astounding us at every turn, like, she has an answer for every problem and all these things, and you see him falling in love with her, but it's not until that thing where she hugs him and it's like, oh, I forgot, like, how, even though, and he's so confused by it because,
yeah,
it's like, oh,
I have no idea.
That's weird.
I thought he was amazing in it.
I think this might be the best Jeremy Renner performance I've seen in a movie.
I would agree with that. I think this is the first time he's actually had a chance. You know,
I would have to rewatch The Hurt Locker, but I hated that movie the first time I saw it. So
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, neither have I.
I just want to talk about that, the first scene of them going into the alien ship. I just thought that was just, like, such a really cool, like, it made me want to be, I was like, I need to watch 2001 Space Odyssey again after watching this, because it's just so, like, how they use sound and, like, with the cinematography, like, they really make this, you know, because the movie, at that point, it's all this, you know, political tension and, like, you know, like, ooh, all this what if and all this crap, but then that point, it makes you, it's like, oh, no, they're dealing with freaking meeting aliens right now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is insane, you know? And it pulls you into that, and you're like, oh my God.
and the whole thing about how much Amy Adams is, like, freaking out at
what's
happening. She's hyperventilating.
Right.
She can barely, like, go through it. She won't even do the jump, and
no.
Forrest Whitaker has to,
like,
chuck her.
Yeah.
And, like, get her onto the ship.
Right, and then they meet the alien, and then it's a hard cut to quarantine. It's a hard cut, and they're back at, like, at the base, you know, and so you don't even see, like, what they did.
Yeah, we don't even get to see anything about it for sure.
You just see Jeremy Renner throwing up in a trash can, and, like, you don't even know what happened, and I think Amy Adams even says, like, am I fired? So you don't even know if they even said anything, you know? And I just think that's awesome because, like, it's so much in sci-fi movies, especially when they're dealing with alien contact and stuff, they get so, I feel like the movie gets so excited about, like, showing the alien and, like, and the whole meaning of the alien that they miss the whole fucking, like, deeper story that's there. They just grace over it, which is, like, you're meeting something that you have no idea what you're about to meet. Like,
you have literally no frame of reference.
No frame of reference at all. And, like, in the first time since Alien, since actually Ridley Scotch's...
Ridley Scotch.
Alien that they... I mean, that's that one does it really well, you know, when they go down on the planet and it's like, it's weird and this is crazy. And
so, well, yeah, I think that's something that we've kind of gotten oversaturated with because we've had so many of, like, the blockbuster alien movies that...
Welcome to Earth!
Yeah, it always comes down to, like, what the aliens, like, technology looks like, or them, like, shooting crazy things, or, like, melting people with their, like, crazy rays. Like, and this movie, like, didn't at any point take that turn, so
no.
It used, like, cinematography so,
oh,
like,
okay.
Efficiently,
well, it's...
like, to, like, make things, like, to, like, bring you into this sense of, like, holy, I'm in a whole nother world right now.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, when they go in and, like, they take that turn, like, when it's, first of all, like, they're, like, looking down below, and
oh,
it's, like, they're, like, looking down at, like, the lift, and then they move up, and then it's, like, you, like, brings you in, and it's, like, upside down, like, from, like, this, like, shot looking straight down to this upside down shot, and then it's, like, comes back around, and it's, like, all right, everything's right side up again, and you're, like, oh, yeah, like, I had to adjust as a viewer
right.
to this, like, situation, like, it, like, gave me, like, a little, like, smidgen of, like, that, like, feeling of, like, that awe.
Yeah.
Of, like, holy shit, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be on that ship, but at least I have, like, some sense of, like, this feels fresh. Like, this feels, like, absolutely, like, surreal right now.
Yeah, it was really, really well done. And to piggyback on what you were saying, there are no action scenes in this movie at all.
Closest thing is the little scene with the bomb on the ship.
The bomb on the ship,
but
and then you hear gunfire.
And even when
in
the there's
background.
The gunfight that's going on below, you don't see it.
You don't see
anything. All you hear
you
is...
You just hear it.
Like, you see the guy, like, passing out the guns of, like, we're going to fight our fellow soldiers, but then you just hear the gunfire. That's it.
Right. And there's no deaths or anything like that. I didn't even realize that until Drew pointed out, like, after the movie. Ooh, let's see here. I have Christopher Nolan thinks he's so clever. That's just because I just finished watching Westworld, and Jonathan, I know it's not Christopher Nolan, but Jonathan Nolan did that show, and it kind of has some, like, multiple timelines in it, and I just felt like, and that's a really good show, and I'll probably plug it at the end of this, but I just want to say that I think that this movie does it way better.
Oh, I would say that this movie is more clever than a lot of things Christopher Nolan has made, and yes, I agree that Christopher Nolan thinks he's very clever.
I mean, I do love you, Christopher Nolan. I think Interstellar's fun, but I think this is better. let's see here. I'm kind of done with my notes. I'm kind of done here. What do you got, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I know we were kind of talking about the how in-depth they get into this movie in terms of theory and still how accessible they make it, and I was doing some reading on Eric Hosferer. That's the screenwriter's name.
Mm-hmm.
But,
did he write
or
the
Heisen,
book?
Heiser, no, so it's based on a short story by Ted Chiang.
Ted Chiang, that's right.
And it's the story of your life. And, but as far as, like, just, like, the scientific principles, like, you know, they were looking into, like, Snell's Law and Ferdinand's principle of least time, and I'm like, I have no idea what, like,
wow.
Like, half of this stuff even is, or, like, outside of, like, you know, the Wikipedia article that I read on it. But I'm like, for the fact that they went that in-depth into making this movie shows, like, at every turn, like, because they never are, like, presenting these, like, complicated, like,
right.
mathematical, like, or, like, you know, like, quantum physics, like, theories.
No, they don't get all annoying about it.
No, but it's, like, still, like, you know, I feel like, you know, from, you know, the people that I've, like, listened to that are scientists that have watched this movie, they have felt that while it does take liberties because it's still science fiction, it still holds true to a lot of scientific principles, which it's nice to, like, have someone who's like, oh, yeah, like, I really, really care about making this, like, the most, this movie having the most integrity as it can.
Right.
Like, even if I'm making this movie for mass appeal, like, I want it to have, like, a layer of integrity and authenticity that you can only get by, like, talking with these these physicists and talking with these mathematicians. So I just want to say, like, I appreciate that level of commitment.
It's very apparent that they, like, took their time and really did their homework on this movie. Like, even to the casual viewer, like, I didn't look up any of that stuff, and I'm very happy that you did, because that's really cool to know. but you can really tell that they took, like, a lot of deliberate time and effort, like, going into this.
And they didn't rely on, like, a Michael Rapaport to, like, explain it to...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I was really glad that at no point did we go to Jeremy Renner to just give us a, like, mid-act two exposition
math
dump. Like, just be like, okay, now let's explain what's going on in the movie.
Right. You mean the squid guys are trying to teach us a time language? Whatever, lady. You know, I'm glad I didn't do that. Like, just a mug to the camera and fucking lame.
We don't have that scene in Jupiter Ascending where Sean Bean explains what's been going on for the last hour.
Although, it did have, I mean, Forrest Whitaker at the very beginning was a goddamn idiot, and it drives me insane. And like, it annoyed me in the first viewing, and it annoyed me in the second viewing, too, where he literally, like, sits down in this woman's office with a recording of an alien talking, and is just like, determine this, and then gets upset when she can't. it's a fucking alien, dude.
And that happens throughout. Yeah. Like, that happens throughout the movie, where she's going, where Forrest Whitaker's like, it can't be possible that doing the written language and the spoken language at the same time is faster. And she's like, no, it 100% is.
Right.
And even to me, I'm not a linguist. I could even pass, like, one semester of Spanish, but I'm like, no, that would definitely be faster.
Well,
it would make way more sense.
Dude, they don't have mouths. Like, yeah. What the fuck are you getting off on that, like, she could figure it out from a tape recording, you know?
Yeah, well, and then, yeah, that on that train of where it's like, oh, yeah, like, you try, everyone's presenting, like, math to these aliens.
Right.
And it's like, well, why wouldn't you think that written language would, like, still be better than, like, trying to vocalize things?
Right.
Yeah. our guys aren't presenting the math. We never see, like, Amy Adams or Jeremy Renner presenting the math, but we hear, like, from these scenes with, like, that's what they're doing in, like, all these other countries, is they're showing, like, differential equations and, like, trying to communicate with them,
Mahjong,
like, through mathematics and games. Yeah, like, the Chinese are, like, exclusively doing it through games, and they're like, oh, that's super dangerous, because, like, if everything is a game, everything is a competition. And they use, like, one of my favorite analogies of, like, if all you have is a hammer, like,
then
every problem is a nail.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
It was great, and like you said, Craig, it made the movie really accessible to everyone, and without dumbing it down or, like, getting all talky and annoying. I'd like to wrap this up with just some kind of, like, final thoughts on the
I have one more note before we just wrap things up. But it's just kind of how seamlessly and well a lot of these things are woven into, like, every fabric of this movie. Like, the written language of the aliens is secular.
Right.
Like, all of their written language are these circles with different, like, variations coming off of them. Versus our language, which is super linear.
Yeah,
like, it's, you read it in a line from left to right, top to bottom. Like, all written human languages are linear. Their language is secular.
Right. Yeah, no, it's like, that. It sounds like it's, like, this, like, annoying, like, driving home a piece, but they really use it artistically, and it's really fucking cool how they do it.
Well, it really reminded me of the Ouroboros, which is the image of, it's like an ancient symbol, like, of dragon eating its own tail.
Yeah.
And it's every time I saw that happen throughout the movie, it just reminded me of that, and I don't know if that was intentional, or, I mean, I feel like it had to be in some sense, because it was like the first trailer I saw of the movie, when I saw that symbol, it was like, I was like, oh, the Ouroboros, I love that, like, like secular time, like, everything, like, that ends has a beginning, every beginning is an end, and
that'll kind of kick me off on my whole, I don't know, overall feeling of this movie, that I like to kind of end this on is, is that, well, first of all, it's easily, like, one of my favorite movies, like, ever right now. And I might just be, like, still high from it because I just watched it twice within a week. But it's so fucking good, and it's so good in, like, so many ways because it, like, hits all these really important points for me as well as, like, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of references and homage to, like, other movies and stuff. Like, the whole story within a story is kind of, like, to me, like, it's, like, taking, like, the, you know, like, a really good Hollywood movie, but then elaborating on it, where it's, like, the director's almost being, like, oh, yeah, you guys are doing that, yeah, I could do that, and I can do even more, you know, I could take that and, like, make it even more, you know, and then, like, the reference to, I mean, there's obvious references to Carl Sagan and Contact, you know, in this, mm-hmm. and 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I love that in good filmmaking when they're able to, like, not only put out a really good product, but then also, like, reflect on, like, the medium that they're in.
Well, to, like, reflect and pay homage to the people who came before them and that influenced them.
Right.
Yeah. Apparently this project started, like, 8 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Like, the screenwriter, like, read the story and was like, I want to make a movie, like, based on this, and started in 2008, like, took it to a bunch of, like, production studios and got turned down every time. Like,
wow.
Just tried to do it multiple times since then. And finally, I think he just, like, got, like, the right people backing him. And I'm like, I'm glad I wish it would have happened sooner, but I feel like it happened in a good time. And I feel like that time that was spent off, or that rejection was probably a good time to, like, refine it and, you know, build it into what it became. So,
right,
like, while I understand that, like, I guess I'm just really upset that, like, more movies like this, like, probably won't happen. Like,
I know.
Because,
oh, this is it's very rare that you get a movie like
yeah.
this.
Because of, like, just seeing how amazing this movie is and, like, how hard it was to get this movie to this point.
Right.
Like, makes me, like, sad for, like, future movies that could be, like, the next arrival or, you know, the next, you know,
oh,
whatever
I know.
They are, not even, you know, say that, you know.
Well, think about all the screenplays that we're never, ever going to see, ever.
Yeah.
That are out there, that are probably, like, my favorite movie might be out there, and I'll never see it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, my overall impression just was that this is a fantastic movie, mostly just because of this. I mean, be one of the smartest movies I've seen in a really long time.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's not relying on anything gimmicky or popcorn-y. Like you said, there's no action scenes in it. But it is so gripping from start to begin, from, like, beginning to end, and it's just so smart and well-crafted.
From start to beginning?
From start to beginning.
From the start to
yeah.
beginning.
From
yeah.
the start.
Oh, yeah, it does start
from
at the beginning.
From
yeah.
the start.
And
oh.
it ends at the end. And
from
yeah.
the start to the beginning to the ending, which is the start.
So we're gonna start talking about this movie and the timeline of this movie. Like,
so,
we're going to
so
start
no,
talking in the fourth dimension,
no,
you guys.
Listeners, that was not me making a mistake
yeah.
In saying something. That was me just putting that little thing up.
Yeah.
We're speaking in the fourth dimension.
Cullen's currently dressed in his robe right now. You know, he's the resident, like, philosopher. but yeah, so that was Arrival. And I guess now we will talk about what we're going to do next week, which is Craig.
Yes, so we will be doing Kevin Spacey's Birdman, which...
Kevin Spacey?
Was it? No, not Kevin Spacey. No, damn it.
Michael Keaton.
Damn it.
Not Kevin Spacey.
Sorry, so
no,
we will be doing Michael Keaton's Birdman.
Yeah, clearly none of us have seen this
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, a movie that none of us have seen, so this should be interesting. It was, 2015, if I remember correctly.
Last year?
I think it was last year.
Really?
And it was kind of, it was the rave.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Rage
no,
for
yeah,
a while.
It was like a big Oscar buzz movie and stuff. It was one of those ones that everyone says was good, but I haven't seen it.
So yep. Same here. Looking forward to it. So, I'd like to just finally end on some things I'm interested in, that we're all interested in. What I'm interested in is Westworld. That's a great show. It's a HBO series. It's 10 episodes long. Jonathan Nolan wrote it and directed it, based off of a Michael Crichton book and movie from, what, the 70s?
70s.
Yeah. Really well done. Really good cast. I won't go into all the cast because there's a lot. And yeah, really good. Highly recommend.
I would say, speaking of screenplays for movies that will never be. Blacklist Table Reads.
Great show.
Is yes. a Great good show. Podcast for where Leonard Black.
Yep.
Yep.
He goes through and does table reads for movies that will never make it to the screen but are awesome in their own ways. Highly recommended for people who are sick of the same movies and want to listen to something awesome.
My plug or recommendation for this week, I was talking about Star Trek earlier, but there is a wonderful documentary on Netflix right now called For the Love of Spock. It is done by Leonard Nimoy's son. It was begun before Leonard Nimoy's death and finished after Leonard Nimoy. It was begun before Leonard Nimoy's death and finished after Leonard Nimoy's death, and is a really great film.
All right. I think that's it.
And yeah, we will be back next week for Birdman on I Want You to Watch This. Thanks, and take care. See you next week.